Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday, the 13th of January. Recent education news in the state of Wisconsin, State Senator Alberta Darling has been talking about the idea of a recovery or state-run district in Milwaukee's public schools. There is no bill yet concerning that, but there is concern. Stop the Takeover of Milwaukee Public Schools petition has hundreds of signatures already, even before a bill. Republicans in the state assembly have drafted a bill that would convert failing public schools to independent charter schools and eliminate state payments for failing private schools. A through F grades would be given to all publicly funded schools with penalties for D and F grades. And there are a lot of intricacies to that, which we will talk a little bit about during the course of this hour. But there are states in this country that have taken over school districts, Louisiana, Michigan, Tennessee, where the Achievement School District in Tennessee was created in 2010 as a result of the state's winning application for Race to the Top federal education funds. They will be serving 10,000 students this year. We'll speak with the chief of staff for that Achievement School District in Tennessee and later with Bob Peterson, who is president of the Milwaukee Teachers Education Association. We'll welcome your phone calls all hour, and here is how you reach us. 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're also on Twitter, and that's at K Dunn Show. Elliot Smalley is our first guest, chief of staff for the Achievement School District, created to raise the bottom 5% of schools in Tennessee to the top 25% in the state. Most of the schools are in Memphis. I believe there is one or maybe more in Nashville. And Elliot, thank you very much for joining us. Hello.
Hi, Kathleen. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, our pleasure. So tell me why it is that the state of Tennessee decided to go this route. It was a result of an application to the Race to the Top, and you were given a grant to do this, or how did it come about?
Yeah, I think a great starting question. I mean, a combination of factors that all kind of came together, and you know, I credit state leaders and former Governor Bredesen, who looked at, we're looking at how schools were doing, how students were doing across Tennessee, and, you know, saw some things when the state standards were changed in Tennessee around that time or just before, you know, this conversation really began. And the legislature saw that proficiency rates dropped when the standards went up. And we're just taking a good hard look at data in Tennessee and how kids were doing and having the right conversations about how this impacted kids in the state's future. And around that same time, you know, a few pieces came together. So Race to the Top was launched and, you know, states were invited to apply. And, you know, one of the conditions of, you know, that application was, what are you going to do about your lowest performing schools, the schools that are, you know, chronically underperforming in your state? And so Tennessee leaders chose to really go after that and put this plan together to create an achievement school district to do something about those lowest performing schools.
And tell me about the district. The charter, they're all charter schools, and there are a variety of charter schools in operation?
Yeah, that's right. It's actually, there's sort of two different kinds of schools. So, we have really two key roles, the way this thing's been designed. And one is, you know, we're kind of an operator of schools ourselves. So we directly run a handful of schools in Memphis. And then all the other schools in the Achievement School District are charters. And, you know, there are kind of two things that are important around that. And one is, you know, as a school district, we can authorize charters. So similar to, you know, local boards and other entities that can authorize charters, we as a district can authorize charters. Now, when we do that, the way we kind of define the relationship is a little bit different, because here it's sort of a, you know, it's a new version of charter schools, really as neighborhood schools. So, you know, charter operators come in and apply to be part of the Achievement School District. And when they do that, you know, we actually kind of match them up with one of these priority neighborhood schools. And when we do that, we don't shut the school down and then, you know, open up an open enrollment charter. Our charters come in and they partner with that neighborhood and those parents, and that attendance zone doesn't change. So our schools actually remain serving the same kids that are zoned to their schools. They just happen to be run by charters, and so what we found is that brings continuity and relationship building, ensuring that we're serving all the kids in the neighborhood. And just by virtue of the charter, the schools just have more flexibility. They can make their decisions and really serve the needs of their kids and be nimble and responsive around those needs.
So let me get this right. You directly run some of the schools and charter schools run the others?
That's right.
So what do they do better than you do, and what do you do better than they do?
So I would say that, we approach this with the same kind of autonomy. So even the schools that, we're running directly, we kind of treat that network of schools almost like it's its own charter network. And so they've come together with the neighborhood there, the community there in an area called Fraser in Memphis. And so they've kind of defined themselves around their kids' needs. And so they actually act very, very similar to our other charters. And, what we found is, not all of our charters are the same. And that's, we think that's a good thing, that we really focus in on the what. We want to move schools to the top 25%. We want to ensure that all kids have a great education. We believe in the potential of every child and in our schools to unlock that potential, their ability and the responsibility to do that. But our charters take different approaches and work in different ways. And what we're, really firm on is where we're all going and the standards around those performance expectations that we all agree to.
Mm-hmm. And tell me what it is that the charter schools may be doing differently that you hope would result in higher performing students.
Yeah, I mean, here's the bottom line on that is we start with this belief that schools get better faster when great educators in schools have the resources and freedom to accomplish great things for kids. And so you'll see, some of our charters have an emphasis on individualized learning and blended learning. You'll see, some have an emphasis. We actually are opening, one of our charters has a Montessori theme that's going to open this coming year. There's project-based learning in one of the high schools. I think that, so you'll see different approaches. So the how is different according to the charter. I think what we believe is instead of, some of that money or a lot of that per pupil money going to a central office that then manages top down what schools need to do, we believe in giving all that money, power, and resources to the school. And that innovation and that improvement is going to be unleashed quicker and more effectively if it comes kind of ground up from the community, from the school itself.
And who has oversight? Do you have local school boards or not?
Well, all of our charters have their own boards. We're actually part of the State Department of Education. So, members kind of that agency, we follow all the same, accountability guidelines, same assessments. It's a similar accountability system. We've designed our own performance framework. And then, for our parents, we've actually, we've got a team here and we work a kind of common handbook, and so have guidelines that are common across our schools. And if parents have, grievances, there's a process to which they can do that through us. But we've really kind of hyper localized the ownership of the schools, and so each of the charter networks has boards. Many of them have different parent community advisory groups, and so that's really where the action happens. And to the extent that from there, something needs to be kind of run up the flagpole, so to speak, we've got some processes built in for that.
And how do you determine if a school is successful?
Yeah, that's a great question. So we've actually created a performance framework that looks at a range of different factors. And, it's aligned with, we've kind of come into this looking at schools that are priority schools. So right from the beginning, school isn't even eligible for the ASD unless it's in the bottom 5% of schools in Tennessee. And if you look at the short list of schools that we considered for matching with the ASD charters this year, fewer than 1 in 6 kids reads and does math on grade level in those schools. So just sense of urgency around how to do better. We look at a number of different things. It's really around academic targets annually, and I'd actually be happy to send this to you so you could post it and share the full kind of all the details of the framework. But what we want to see is, you know, we really want to see growth. I mean, our emphasis is around schools, you know, getting from point A to point B faster each year. So we've got some measures where we're looking at that. And then there's some other things just around school culture and health that are really important.
Mm-hmm. And what is it that you believe that some schools, I understand that some of these charter companies are coming from, I guess California is pretty big into charters. Why would a company out of California be able to come into your district in Memphis or in Nashville and be able to understand the community and run a school better than people who are homegrown Tennesseans?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, we're really proud of the charter operators here who have committed to do to serve our kids and do this work, and many of them are local. I mean, some of our just greatest charters that we have here are actually homegrown. And just a point of clarification, when you say the word company, by law, all of the charters in the ASD must be nonprofits. So these are nonprofit organizations. I wouldn't refer to them as companies. They're all not-for-profits and have to be a part of the ASD. We believe that even if a charter operator comes in, what we want to look at is results. We want to see their results either as a network or as educators. And so they come in and they actually spend a lot of time here kind of, you know, setting up shop locally, engaging local educators and building their team. And what we really want to see is results for kids. I mean, that's what this is all about. Like I said, you know, you look at the schools that we kind of engaged this fall to join the ASD, fewer than one in six kids reading on grade level. So there's an urgency to do better, and there's an urgency to, you know, partner as adults and collaborate and figure out how we need to do this better.
Mm-hmm. Are your schools pretty segregated?
I mean, we're from the beginning there, you know, we're coming in and they're, I think, 96% African-American. Like I said, we serve neighborhood schools. So we don't, you know, we're not going out and having an open enrollment charter as part of the ASD. By law, all of our kids have to be zoned to bottom 5% schools. So, you know, the sad truth of that is, you know, a lot of the neighborhoods that are part of those zones and a lot of the students that are in those schools, do look a certain way. And so, you know, these are the students that we are committed to serving. And so, yeah, I mean, our schools are about 96% African American. For us, the priority is a great education for every child in every school.
And do you feel like you have enough money in terms of paying your teachers, in terms of dealing with all of the issues that can surround high poverty in these schools?
Yeah, I think that, you know, we start with just this notion of, you know, putting 100% of the per pupil funding into the school and giving the educators the flexibility to do what they need to do with those resources. And so that allows the educators in the building to get really creative about how they serve every kid's needs. You know, we've also engaged a lot of partners. You look at Memphis as an example, and you've got the Strive Network here. You know, I think about a faith-based organization, Agape, who works with our schools in Fraser, communities and schools. I mean, there are multiple nonprofit and community-based organizations who are here and working in the community, have been for years. And so I think for us, it's, you know, it's not just about the money that the schools get and deserve to serve their kids' needs, but it's also, you know, working shoulder to shoulder with all the great community organizations to make sure that whether it's, you know, speech pathology or mental health or mentoring or tutoring, you know, we're figuring out ways to ensure that kids get the kinds of services that they need to succeed, in addition to, you know, that core of making sure there's a great teacher in every classroom.
Well, let's talk about that, because I think a lot of people believe when we look at our own lives in school that having great teachers in many cases made us the people we are. Do you feel, I have read some criticism of your schools that you are using very young teachers who don't have a lot of experience, that there were a number of Teach for America teachers in the schools. Do you have experienced teachers? Are you using a lot of Teach for America teachers?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, we've got a mix, so it really depends, you know, on, you know, which charter operator and which school that you're looking at. But I think, you know, you go in our schools, and I'd encourage anybody, you know, from Wisconsin who's, you know, wants to take a hard look at this to, you know, get in touch with me, get in touch with us, and set up a visit. I mean, you know, see for yourselves what it looks like. But yeah, you go into a lot of our schools and you see experienced teachers. You know, some of the best teachers that we have are teachers that were in the schools before we came in and got involved. And some of the best teachers we have are those experienced teachers, 5, 10, 15 years of experience. And then, yeah, we've got some young teachers, too, who are doing a great job and who are fully committed to this work. And so it's a mix, but it looks different depending on, you know, the school that you go to and the charter operator. I think what we could all agree to is, you know, we need great teachers doing this work. And, you know, we see them coming from different places. We see them, you know, coming from Memphis and in Nashville and with different years of experience. And the bottom line is, you know, we need to start with that fantastic educator in the classroom and make sure we're doing everything we can to support those teachers. And, you know, that's one thing we're actually working on here in Memphis is a, you know, Teacher Town initiative where a range of nonprofits have come together to really make this a great place for teachers to live and grow and succeed.
And Elliot, how about the pay? Is it similar? Is it the same as public schools, teacher pay?
Yeah, and just to clarify, we are public schools. We're a public school district created by the state of Tennessee, and
right.
All of our schools are public schools.
Non-charter schools.
Yeah, we're public charter schools,
mm-hmm.
and with a handful of direct run schools. We're all public schools. It's you know, public money going into the schools. I would say there are similarities. I think the great thing is, you know, I can just speak to the schools that we're running directly. I mean, the leadership in the schools got together with the teachers and, you know, designed, you know, the system through which teachers would be compensated and, you know, designed the leadership opportunities that teachers could have. And, you know, after 5 years, teachers could make over $90,000. They could take on a range of different, you know, leadership opportunities in the school and have the kind of, you know, career ladder, which allows them to not only extend their impact in the classroom, but, you know, beyond to the whole school and to the network. And the great thing is, you know, if you were here just a few years ago, I mean, if you were a great teacher, there was, you know, like one HR office that you could call. And there weren't a lot of options in terms of employers. And now, you know, if a teacher comes to Memphis, there are a lot of great options. There are a lot of different, you know, approaches to teaching and learning that you'll see across schools. And so, you know, great teachers here are being treated just like great professionals in other career categories where, you know, they're highly coveted and, you know, it's the type of, you know, kind of teacher marketplace where those highly coveted teachers are going to be treated like the rock stars they are.
Mm-hmm. You said that people from Wisconsin would be willing to come and look at what you're doing in Tennessee. Has anybody done that? There is talk about the Wisconsin legislature perhaps eventually dealing with a bill that would create a recovery district in Milwaukee Public Schools. Has anybody been down to Tennessee from Wisconsin to look things over?
Not that I can think of in recent memory. I don't remember anyone visiting with us.
Elliot Smalley is our guest. We have time to take a few phone calls for him. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. Elliot is chief of staff for Achievement School District, which is educating some 10,000 students, mostly in Memphis, Tennessee, but also in other parts of the state, including the Nashville area. The schools are heavily minority and they're neighborhood schools. They are public charter schools run by, as he said, some of them are run by the organization. Some are run by charter nonprofit operators from wherever they happen to be. And the motivation of designing such a district was to move the bottom percent of schools to the top 25% in 5 years. So we welcome your phone calls. Lines are open for you right now, 800-486-8655. So when you're looking at results, Elliot, when you're looking at, well, this whether or not this is all working, you've had a few years now to judge. Have students learned to read better? Are math scores going up?
Yeah, absolutely. So when we look at our results, I mean, one thing that, you know, we continue to grow. And so there's sort of different ways to look at this because, you know, last year, 2/3 of our schools were actually in their first year because each year we've kind of onboarded. We've taken on more schools as we grow. What's really encouraging and exciting is, you know, we've got 2 years of actual achievement data. This is our third year running schools this year. So we've got some new schools that are just starting this year, and we had some new schools just starting last year. So there are a few things that we can look at. One is, you know, the state of Tennessee runs this priority list every 3 years. So that's the list that basically, you know, according to the state assessment system, you know, where does your school rank? And 3 years ago when the list was first run compared to just this fall when the list was rerun, there are now 4,500 fewer kids in priority schools in Memphis. And so you look at Memphis as a place where it's not just the ASD, but it's also Shelby County schools, local agencies. I mean, there's just great, extraordinary momentum around this. Not just us, we're just kind of one ingredient in this recipe. And it just based on all the energy that folks have put into this, through the ASD in Shelby County with its innovation zone, you know, now we've got 4,500 fewer kids. There are fewer priority schools in Memphis. This year, our kids outgrew their state peers in reading and math. And then the other thing that we look at is if you look at the charter schools that started 2 years ago, so now that first small group of charter schools for which we have 2 years of data, over that 2 years, they've averaged in proficiency 11.2 point gain. So over double-digit gains in 2 years. By comparison, the schools that we look at, the priority schools this year that we looked at to consider for matching with the ASD, their average growth over 3 years was 2 points. And so 2 point gains over 3 years in the schools we looked at compared to 11 point gains over just 2 years in our charter schools that have 2 years with us. The final thing I'd say about those charter schools with 2 years is they all had the highest possible growth rating this year. All three of those schools were what's called level five on Tennessee's kind of one-year growth measure, and that's as high as it gets. Two out of three are already off the priority list. They're already out of the bottom 5%. And the third had double-digit proficiency gains last year and is doing really, really well. So there are a lot of encouraging signs. You know, and there's also just a need for us to absolutely get better. And, you know, we're just really getting started with this, and we're committed. It's, you know, it's going to be more of a marathon. And there's a reason why we set that 5-year goal. We recognize, you know, it's going to take a little bit of time, but it's encouraging to see folks here in Memphis working so hard toward this goal for kids.
If indeed it does turn out to be wildly successful, why not use this model for all schools in Tennessee?
Yeah, I mean, I think for now we've got our eyes focused on just getting it done and serving our kids. And so, you know, who knows what the future holds? I mean, we're absolutely encouraged to see, you know, the commitment by local districts to partner with us and, you know, really push, I think, improvements in their schools. You know, one of the things that we're working with Shelby County Schools here is to make sure that by 2017, we've got some kind of significant intervention in every one of the priority schools. If it's, you know, if it's not us, it's them. It's something where we're, you know, we can demonstrate, hey, we are improving the school and we're improving outcomes for kids. And yeah, I think, you know, there may be time a few years down the road, maybe even longer, where we consider what kinds of lessons, you know, are applicable beyond the work that we're doing. I'd say for now, you know, we're just really focused on getting this right. And I think until we do, you know, that's where we're going to keep our focus.
And is there any concern that you might be too focused on math and reading at the expense of some of what makes school fun to go to and enriching, you know, music and drama and sporting activities? I understand some of these schools, a couple, as I've been looking at the description, have double blocks of math and reading. Forgive me, math teachers, but if I had to do double blocks of math in school, I would have had a very hard time.
Yeah, I hear that. I mean, I think the great thing is, you know, we just had a celebration over at one of our schools earlier this fall. U.S. Secretary Duncan came and convened local faith community and community partners. And, you know, we had this high-stepping band from our high school, Fairley, which is partnered with Green Dot, one of our charter operators. And, you know, it's great to see, you know, sort of where, you know, the myths about certain charter schools are shattered. I mean, if you go to our schools and you know, you take a look at some of the after-school programs, the music programs, arts, enrichment, you know, visiting colleges like Vanderbilt, taking kids on, you know, field lessons. I mean, it's much broader than reading and math. And the great thing is, again, I mean, we start with this idea that it's the educators in the schools and the teachers who know their kids best and can design those programs based on what is going to make school fun and engaging for kids. And they get the freedom to do that. And the other thing I'd say is, you know, we do a ASD-wide parent survey. And, you know, last year, at the end of the year, almost 9 out of 10 parents graded our schools either an A or a B. And so I think, you know, again, the invitation to visit if anyone's interested, but I would encourage you to talk, you know, talk less to me. And of course, I'm happy to talk to you about, you know, ASD overview, but I'd encourage folks to get in our schools, talk to students, talk to parents who have actually experienced this thing. And, you know, they give the best testimony, you know, around what this means and how, you know, at their school, school has been made fun again.
Let's take a call for you. It's Rich in Burlington. Hi, Rich.
Thank you very much for taking my call. I just retired from 33 years of public high school, and I'm not sure that what these charter schools is the answer, but one thing I do know is that anything that will move control of the school back to a very local level, especially getting parental involvement increased, and getting parents on board, that's where the control should be. The state, it's not the state's kids, it's the parents' kids we're educating. And I was obviously a science teacher and not an English teacher calling them kids, but they're kids. But in hearing all these numbers bantered about of a 2-point increase and an 11-point increase, I'm not convinced after seeing the results and seeing my students in the classroom, what they can do and what they don't do, and the results of these tests. I'm not convinced at all that the tests, the standardized tests and so forth, really are an indication of what the student's abilities are. But anything you could do to remove it, move the control back locally, one of the arguments is, well, that could mess up the kids in the school. That's true. But the other side of it is, when you move the control to the state or the national level, now you're talking about messing up a whole lot of kids instead of the kids in one school.
Thanks, Rich, for your call. Elliot.
Yeah, I appreciate that, Rich, and thanks for your service. Wow, over 30 years. I appreciate hearing that feedback. I mean, I agree. I mean, put the power where it belongs. That's in schools. And I think for far too long, you know, education systems have held the power in buildings and in addresses that are too far from the schools, and they're making decisions, you know, in buildings where kids don't come every day to be educated. And so I would agree that, you know, this is really at its heart an approach that gives the resources back to schools and really truly localizes leadership and decision making back into schools where it belongs.
Elliot, thanks very much for being with us. I'm sure some people from Wisconsin may be down to see you.
Okay, sounds great. Kathleen, thanks for having me. I understand you guys have some football on the horizon. Good luck with that.
Thanks, Elliot.
All right.
Yeah, everybody's following the Packers these days, no matter where we're talking to people. Go Packers. Elliot Smalley, Chief of Staff for the Achievement School District. It's in Tennessee. Our conversation today prompted by some news. Well, there's a lot of education news, but that there may soon be a bill in the state of Wisconsin that would recreate a state-run district in Milwaukee, a recovery district, and that it would be perhaps somewhat similar to what's going on in Tennessee. So we thought we would find out what's going on in Tennessee. We're going to hear a different point of view as we continue here on the Ideas Network. Bob Peterson will join us. He is president of the Milwaukee Teachers Education Association Plan. There's already a petition stop the takeover of Milwaukee Public Schools. We'll talk about that in a moment here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Bob Peterson is with us, been on this show many times before, president of the Milwaukee Teachers Association, and we're talking about the possibility of a recovery district, a state-run district in the city of Milwaukee. There's other education news that we will discuss with Bob as well. Hello, Bob. Thanks very much for being with us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Is this just talk at this point, or do you think there is active work going on to create a recovery district?
I think there is active work going on. You never can tell until you see it in writing. The fact of the matter is that the MMAC last a year ago, August 2013, brought up your previous guest and somebody else from New Orleans to speak to them about recovery zones. And so I think it's something we have to seriously consider. And quite frankly, the Assembly Bill number one is pretty much tied to a lot of those same things.
Mm-hmm. So there is obviously concern about this on the part of the Milwaukee Teachers Education Association. There's already a petition, which I understand hundreds of people have signed.
Thousands of people have signed this now, really,
to stop the takeover. What are the primary concerns, Bob?
Well, let's just, first of all, just say there's two existing recovery zones, you know, in this country, New Orleans and then Memphis, which we heard about a little earlier. And they're clearly, these are templates for complete privatization of our schools. In New Orleans, the nation's first recovery zone, all the people who worked for public schools were fired. And in fact, there's today, there are very, essentially no or very few public schools left in New Orleans. And in Memphis, the 30 schools run by private organizations, while your previous speaker said they were public, it's true they get public funds, but those are not public employees. They are private employees, many of which are from TFH, Teach for America, a lot, you know, and a lot of older, experienced veteran teachers, many African-American women, were laid off when this new district started, this Achievement School District, as it's
called. Perhaps it goes without saying, but I've heard from so many teachers that it takes a while to become an expert teacher, that the longer – you need at least 3 years in order to be able to do your craft well, and it's a job that that requires just a lot of heart and a lot of head and a lot of soul and all of that. Is that true? Do you think that you may be running the risk of not having quality, high-quality instruction with these kinds of takeover districts?
I know from my personal experience, I've taught fifth grade for over nearly 30 years, that I learned every year. Even in my 27th year, I was learning. And I know that there are I think I was great when I was – I thought I was particularly great when I was first and second-year teacher. But then as I got older, I knew I wasn't as great than I thought, you know. Certainly, I think of any profession. You get better. You get better by doing. And what's really disconcerting is a lot of these charter schools and recovery zones are built on with a fundamental bias against veteran teachers. In fact, you know, in New Orleans – the former recovery zone superintendent, Paul Vallis, told the BBC News in 2010, he said, "I don't want the majority of my teaching staff to work more than 10 years. The cost of sustaining those individuals become enormous between retirement and health care." And so they have a theory that we can save money by just continually hiring new teachers. Now, I asked, and Teach for America generally, the students stay, the teachers stay 2 or 3 years. Would you want your doctor to, after 10 years, retire, your surgeon, and then always have a fresh surgeon coming in? I don't think so. So that's one whole issue. And in fact, I think that's one of the reasons why if you actually look at the data more closely in Memphis, you'll find that there some of the public schools are outscoring on tests this ASD. I encourage people to look at a website called Expect More. TNTennessee.org, and the article Just the Facts, ASD versus Innovative Zone. The Innovative Zone is a group of schools in Memphis that's run by the public schools or public school employees, and they're fast outpacing them. I don't really want to get into the details of test scores and so on and so forth, but I think it's clear that in Wisconsin, in Milwaukee, we have had 20, 25 years of experience with privatized schools, private voucher schools and privately run charter schools. And there is no evidence that those schools, on an average, work better. And oftentimes, a lot of the evidence is they're somewhat worse than the public schools. So we've had a long experience with this. It's not doing what they originally claimed it would do.
Mm-hmm. So what's behind all of it, do you think? Is it indeed from the best of motivations, a desire to get those low-performing schools to do better so that everybody can achieve and have meaningful lives and great work? Or is there some ulterior motive?
It depends on who you're talking about. I mean, if you look at the Walmart, Walton Foundation, the Bradley Foundation, you know, the other groups, the right-wing privatizers who are out there, they want to privatize the entire public sector, not just schools. So schools, though, is a huge, huge target for them. It's called edubusiness, whether it's the testing groups like Pearson, whether it's the charterizing groups, some of which are for-profit, some of which are nonprofit. I might mention that he said they're all nonprofit. That's true in Milwaukee and Wisconsin as well. But as we know from looking at the health industry, you can run a pretty healthy salary if you're head of a nonprofit organization into the millions and certainly into the hundreds of thousands for these school operators. People are making money off of this. I think that the question comes to the people of Wisconsin is, do we want to keep locally controlled, democratically elected school boards running our schools, or do we want to hand them over to private companies or private organizations, third-party groups? My answer, based not just as a teacher, but as a citizen, as somebody who believes in public education as a foundation of democracy, is the answer is no. We want to keep our schools locally controlled by democratically elected school boards. And when they are struggling, we should put the resources and time and effort in to fix them. We need to fix our schools, not abandon them.
Another thing that, as I was looking at what their charter schools are, and I understand this is true of some of the charter schools or voucher schools in Milwaukee, there really is a heavy-duty emphasis on reading, which is an important thing, and math. But somebody made the point the last time we were talking about voucher schools and charter schools, is that if you look at what's being offered at some of these schools and then look at Nicolet High School or some of the very wealthy districts in this country, you've got all these languages, you've got terrific theater productions, you've got speech competition, etc. It seems to be a very narrowly focused curriculum.
Right. Narrowly focused curriculum. It can also be called like an apartheid curriculum, what Jonathan Kozol talked about, the difference between suburban and urban schools. You don't see a lot of these charter schools going into the wealthy suburbs that you talk about. Those people think they should have well-resourced, high-quality public schools. Well, why shouldn't the same be true for Milwaukee? And that's probably what's most disconcerting about you have a North Shore suburban legislator, Alberta Darling, talking about this recovery zone stuff quite a bit. Well, why doesn't she bring it to her own school district, you know, up in the North Shore? I'd rather have well-resourced public schools run by democratically elected school board for Milwaukee.
So considering the model we already have in Milwaukee, what could happen, what needs to happen in order to have better educational experiences for students who are primarily minority in a high-poverty district?
And first of all, let me just say that, you know, one of the things that your previous speaker talked about, I said, one of our schools is a Montessori school.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Milwaukee Public Schools has 7 or 8 Montessori schools, are nationally known. It has more Montessori students in schools than any public school system. We have a great bilingual program, language immersion program. We have IB, AP. We have arts programs. Milwaukee Public Schools in the press, not this media, but in the press generally gets a bum rap when it comes to let's do this innovation. So there's a lot of innovation going on in Milwaukee Public Schools. That being said, there are schools that are struggling. There are students that are struggling. And I think a couple key things here. One is there's really good work going on now. The MTA, MPS is working together. There's a Schools and Communities United group. There's a lot of religious groups that are pitching in, and people are targeting some of those schools that are struggling the most. One of the things that we've brought to Milwaukee recently is this community schools concept. The MTA and MPS sent over 70 people down to a national conference in Cincinnati a year ago, and we have just, as of the end of this month, we'll hire our first school community resource coordinators working with United Way. It's United Way, MTA, and MPS working together. Why is this so important? Because, in fact, we have to admit that poverty plays a huge role.
Sure.
It's connected to test scores. That's the correlates most is socioeconomic status, your test scores. And I know as a teacher, you know, if a student comes in who doesn't have a steady home, there's over 3,000 homeless kids in the Milwaukee Public Schools, a student who doesn't have adequate health care, a student whose mother and father are struggling at low-wage, minimum-wage jobs, those students are at a disadvantage compared to others who are more well-off economically. And until this community decides to deal with some of those broader issues, we're not going to succeed as a school system. I'm not saying that we can't do better, but I'm saying, and there's no excuses here, but it is a fact. that those kind of issues impact us. So the community school concept is a sort of a very conscientious wraparound process where the health, the nutritional needs, mental health needs of students and even family members are met right at that school. We're going to start it at Our Avenue, Bradley Tech High School, and James Madison High School, JMAC, three schools that are definitely struggling, but have great, great potential.
We're going to welcome phone calls for Bob. We have a lot on the table here. We're focusing on, and we did invite Senator Alberta Darling to be on this program to talk about this idea that there might be a recovery or a state-run district in Milwaukee. Not a bill yet, but we're thinking that there may be. And our guest, this part of the program, Bob Peterson, president of the Milwaukee Teachers Education Association and a fifth-grade teacher for how many years did you say?
Nearly 30.
Woo-wee. That's a long time, is with us in our studio. What do you think about a recovery district for MPS? There, and you can branch into some of this other news, too, that the Republicans in the State Assembly have recently drafted a bill converting failing public schools to independent charter schools. And also, although there is controversy about this, eliminate state payments to failing private schools in terms of determining how a school is getting a certain kind of grade. It becomes somewhat confusing because the test is different for these different kinds of schools. At any rate, what do you think of what you heard from the head of the district in Tennessee, the chief of staff for the Achievement School District? Bob said that they've been to Milwaukee to talk about their district. It may be a model for the state of Wisconsin. Do you have concerns with this? Do you think, well, maybe it's a good idea? Here's our phone number, 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show. We have a limited time with Bob, so get your calls in early. We'd love to speak with you, and we will in a moment, on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Bob Peterson is here now. 800-486-8655 is our number. We have tons of calls coming in, so we'll try to take as many as we can. Sharon in Janesville, hi.
Hi, Kathleen. I'm listening to the discussion today. I haven't heard anyone mention the conditions of the schools themselves and the environments these kids are going to school and what they have to put up with. I know you had a program a couple years ago that talked about, you know, cafeterias and just, I just am thinking about the environment these kids are asked to learn in and what a difference it would make if they had decent schools to go to begin with.
Bob.
Yeah, actually, Milwaukee Public Schools has done a pretty good job of sustaining its school buildings, but they are old, and there is a real numbers crunch. There's a financial crunch. Milwaukee Public Schools, like public schools around the state, are under-resourced, and I hope that we can push the governor and the legislature to at least put in enough money to keep up with inflation. That would help. I agree with the caller that in some schools, it's definitely they're overcrowding. Other schools, it isn't.
And we've had our children went to MPS and are out of the system now and have been for about 5 years. But I know toward the end of the youngest high school experience, the classrooms were pretty darn crowded, Bob. You know, 30, over 30, 35, right, more than that students. Is that still a problem with MPS? And what would alleviate? Because it's obvious. People say, oh, it doesn't make any difference. Of course it makes a difference if you're a teacher and you have that many kids.
Right. Teachers need to spend individual time with students and give quality feedback to students at all ages from kindergarten through high school. It is a problem, and it's a problem because of resources. It's not because the district wants to have large class sizes. It's because there's not enough money to hire the adults to work with the students, teachers, educational assistants, art, music, FIED, mm-hmm, librarians. That's the under-resourced character of the public schools. Not only in Milwaukee, a lot of rural schools around the state, it's a huge problem.
Let's go to Susan in Milwaukee next. Hi, Susan.
Hi.
Hi.
I still think that the biggest influence on a child's success are the parents. And to punish the teachers and the schools when the test scores aren't up there makes no sense at all. You know, I think the people who need help are the parents who need to help their children with school and be able to encourage them. And I think that, you know, to put the funding in that direction would make much more sense than to start a new school system.
I agree. And in fact, the whole community school concept is to bring parents more into the schools and help them. The other thing I'll say is MTA and MPS talked about, and finally the school board agreed, not finally, but last year, to have a parent coordinator, engagement coordinator at each school. And that's a paraprofessional position, and there's one at each school. I encourage parents to go to those schools and ask for the coordinator and get involved in the schools.
Thanks, Susan, for the call. Allie from Detroit. Hi, Allie.
Hi.
Hi.
So I wanted to say Detroit has one of these state-run school districts called the Educational Achievement Authority, and it's pretty much been an abject failure. We had some investigative journalism in one of our local rags expose some emails from different people about how our kids are basically test subjects for software that doesn't work. Kids were sitting around waiting for months for computers and software, and basically no learning was happening. So I really hope that Milwaukee doesn't get a similar thing. I would definitely look into the Educational Achievement Authority from your friends across the lake.
And is it still
pretty bad?
Is it still functioning, Allie?
Sorry, what did you say?
Is the program still functioning?
It is. It's still running. A lot of us are trying to vote it out, but it hasn't worked yet.
Bob.
Thank you for the call. I agree with you. And in fact, nationally, the studies show that charter schools, not only when they're concentrated like in these recovery zones, but nationwide, give most of them, like 75% in a recent Stanford study, had the same or worse results in reading than public schools, and 71% had the same or worse results in math. These are not solutions to our problems. There's other issues. As one caller called, you know, poverty, there's issues of under-resourcing, there's other issues that we have to address. It's not going to be solved through third-partying or handing over our public schools to third parties.
Rick, Green Bay, hi.
Yes.
Hi, Rick.
Yes, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My comments I wanted to put as far as the whole debate around charter schools and redirecting funds and those types of things that have been discussed is that our school systems are broken. The results that, especially in reading, the reading area that I'm very familiar with, are dismal. They're just lousy. And if we redirect funds to a charter school or whatever, I wouldn't expect the results to be any different. There's the teachers and administrators are all stamped out of the same molds from our educational systems, our colleges and universities, and they all do about the same thing. So until they actually do something different, you're not going to see different results.
What do you,
that when you go to charter schools, it typically costs a lot less.
Uh-huh.
So that's pretty much my comment.
Well, what do you want them to do differently? What do you want what do you want everybody to do differently, Rick?
I want them to look at some of the research that's out there and find out that typically the biggest problem children don't learn to read is because they fail to learn to read words. And until they actually have the instruction that is the direct instruction that teaches children to process left to right, top to bottom,
okay,
and how sounds and letters are associated, they are not going to learn to read words.
Bob?
Well, I agree that with the caller stating that just turning them over to charters, it's not going to help. I do agree. I also agree that we need to help kids learn how to read well. There's a lot of different theories and on this matter. I mean, I've taught reading for many years. The fact is, though, that if we have veteran teachers who get quality professional development, who are certified, and who are part of a school community that's has involved parents, we're going to get a lot better results than if we have privately run schools that are with teachers who are there for a couple of years and then leave, and it's not governed by a democratic elected school board.
Thanks, Rick, for your call. Bob, we're out of time. The hour went very fast. Thank you so much for being with us.
You're welcome.
And keep us informed on all that's happening. A lot is happening on many fronts, it would appear.
Thank
from
you.
From news accounts the last couple of weeks. Our guest this part of the program, Bob Peterson, he taught for many, many years here in the Milwaukee Public School District, and Elliot Smalley with us, the first part of the show, Chief of Staff for Achievement School District, who was in Milwaukee to talk about the possibility of a recovery district, state-run district here in the city of Milwaukee. Thanks to Cynthia Schuster and KP Whaley for producing this hour. Thanks to KP for on-air production in our studios in downtown Milwaukee. We have news coming up from National Public Radio, and we'll return to talk about the film Selma. So if you've seen it, please stay with us. We certainly welcome all your phone calls.